Will you look at that? Somebody pushed play. All right, here we go. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 111 of Little Brother for the 10th of December, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Yoel Roth, Twitter's former safety chief, is concerned about the direction the company is taking under Musk's command. He describes Musk's activity as moving fast and breaking things. While over at Facebook that had been a slogan for the founder Mark Zuckerberg, if you were to apply it to something, it is critically important to be mindful that the things that you break do not matter. Roth does not believe that this is happening at Twitter right now. In particular, he has expressed concerns that the amount of work that is needed to keep the platform safe cannot be carried out with only a skeleton crew, and that staffing cuts at the social media giant have potentially endangered human rights activists and marginalized individuals who have used the platform in the past. A bill is before the Senate right now called the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act of 2022. It's one of those bills that keeps coming back for another attempt, the last attempt, predictably enough, being called the Journalism and Competition and Preservation Act of 2021. Go figure. The law would carve out an antitrust exemption to allow news organizations to bargain collectively with search and social media giants such as Google's parent company Alphabet and Facebook and Instagram's parent company, Meta. In response to the potential for this to become law, Meta have stated that they would like to stop making news available on their sites entirely. Last year, a similar bill passed into law in Australia, resulting in Meta blocking news from Australian outlets, but only for a brief time. Waze has been a subsidiary of Google's parent company since 2013, 4 years before the parent company changed its name to Alphabet. Waze is a GPS map application with some additional features that enable users of the app to avoid traffic snafus and to enter alerts about obstructions and speed traps, features that Alphabet has since added to its primary Google Maps application. Between 2013 and now, the two applications have shared data but have been staffed separately. The news here is that while the apps will remain two separate entities from the end user's perspective, Alphabet are merging the two development teams together. Waze will no longer have its own distinct CEO, however, no actual layoffs are anticipated. A Florida man, Nicholas Truglia, was sentenced last week to 18 months in prison and ordered to pay a little over $20 million in restitution to cryptocurrency investor Michael Turpin. About 4 years ago, Truglia and his accomplices carried out a SIM swap on Turpin and used the access that they gained to make off with roughly $23.8 million in cryptocurrencies, which were converted from the various source currencies into Bitcoin and transferred to an online account controlled by Truglia. From there, Truglia retained $673,000 and divided the balance amongst his accomplices. Truglia has until January 30th to pay the restitution. Chinese hacking group APT41 are believed to be responsible for the theft of approximately $20 million in U.S. COVID-19 relief benefits. So far, the authorities have uncovered such fraud in around 12 states. However, they believe that this is just the tip of the iceberg. AirTags are small tracking devices manufactured by Apple, primarily invented to be a key finder, which allow you to locate personal items. The AirTags work by emitting a Bluetooth signal that can be picked up and reported by an Apple device, allowing the tags to be located wherever they are. Two women have filed a class action lawsuit against Apple in the U.S. Court for the Northern District of California, alleging that Apple has failed to safeguard against AirTags being used for stalking purposes. One of the two plaintiffs found a stalker's AirTag had been placed in the wheel well of her car, while another had found one in the bottom of her bag. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. It's been a busy week. We've got three items. First up, SiriusXM offers a product called Connected Vehicle Services. The company's website explains the product, quote, "Providing drivers with a broad range of useful, usable, and compelling content while on the go is only part of the challenge. In-vehicle information must be presented in a way that results in a contextual and emotionally gratifying driver experience and without increasing driver distraction or mental task overload." So far, so good. The problem is, security researcher Sam Curry has found an exploit for it, in which he and his team were able to remotely unlock, start, locate, flash, and honk any remotely connected Honda, Nissan, Infiniti, or Acura just by knowing the car's VIN. Curry alerted SiriusXM to the issue, and the company has quickly corrected it. Second, North Korean hacker group Lazarus are believed to be behind a fake cryptocurrency application called Bloxholder. Installing the Bloxholder app will deploy a malware called Apple Juice, which can be used to establish a connection to the pwned device and steal cryptocurrency from it and any accounts linked to it. Third and final, and of possible utility to the threat actors mentioned in the last item, Samsung have lost control of their app signing key. This key is a small block of data that can be used to produce a signature for every application that they publish, which in turn can be validated by checking the published app with a separate public key via public key encryption. The availability of the private signing key means that anyone in possession of it can publish an app and have it appear to have come legitimately from Samsung. I have a follow-up from last week's story about the city of San Francisco approving police use of killer robots. The decision, as passed, would have allowed the San Francisco Police Department to use robots that had been equipped with lethal weapons, allowing for lethal force to be dispensed by remote control. The decision was approved by a vote of 8-3. This week, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, bowing to overwhelming public pressure and righteous outrage, reversed that decision, once again, by 8-3. While we should celebrate this victory, it's important that we do not rest on it. I would warn San Franciscans, and for that matter, people everywhere, to stay on your guard. This is not the first time that this sort of question has arisen, and it is unlikely to be the last. It may even come up for consideration again in the same place, and it is nearly certain that it will come up in other places as well. If I catch wind of it, I'll be sure to tell. We need to talk about what happened in North Carolina. For those who missed it, on Sunday there was a large power outage in North Carolina affecting most of Moore County. So what, you say? Well, the outage was caused by gunfire. I should clarify, it was caused by gunfire at multiple separate facilities. In other words, this was no accident. The facilities that were attacked are power substations. Substations are basically midway distribution points for power. Power is distributed over a wide area on transmission lines, which are the ones you see on the tall metal towers, usually with 3 or 6 wires suspended from aggressive-looking insulators high overhead. The power that's carried in these lines is suitable for distribution over a wide area, but with the voltages ranging in the hundreds of thousands and sometimes even the millions, the power in these can't be delivered down the street without the voltage first being substantially reduced. That's where substations come in. Power from the transmission lines is delivered to substations where giant hulking conversion devices called transformers are used to reduce the voltage of the power to something that can be distributed to neighborhoods, something usually between 2,000 and 15,000 volts, which can be sent down streets and along roads along the very top of wooden power poles. The final transition takes place very close to the point of delivery. A much smaller transformer, or a set of 3 of them, depending on the power needs, are mounted to poles used to lower the voltage again, to the array of more sane options, such as the 120 volts that appears at a standard electrical socket in the U.S., and the 240 or 208 volts that can be used to power larger appliances such as stoves, clothes dryers, and water heaters. Sometimes you may find 277 volts or 480 volts as well, but those are pretty much confined to industrial and commercial buildings. Mind you, this is grossly oversimplified and very glossed over, but I wanted to give you enough of an understanding to be able to see where the facility that was attacked fits into things. Just to repeat, the substation is the place where the voltage is lowered from the hundred thousands to millions down into the voltages in the thousands or tens of thousands. Most importantly, they are critical. When you take a substation offline, you will probably knock out the power to a large area. There is redundancy in the power grid, and certainly that can be used to try to keep the lights on, but sometimes this goes wrong and a cascading effect occurs. For instance, in 1977, a substation in New York City failed. Others tried to take on the load, and the outage cascaded, plunging the whole city into darkness. That, thankfully, did not happen here. What did happen is that 2 separate substations were attacked, eliminating a significant portion of the redundancy that should exist, darkening most, if not all, of Moore County. So here's what we know. First, this event exposed a weakness in the power grid. Second, this looks like it was a coordinated effort, for which obviously that means it was also deliberate, like I said. Third, in the current radicalized political environment, severe repercussions may not be sufficient to prevent a recurrence. This specific weakness in the power grid wasn't an unknown. The importance of substations is well understood. As I mentioned already, redundancies are built into the power grid to try to mitigate this problem. However, cascades are already a known risk, and one that the utilities and grid operators have worked to mitigate through various means. On top of that, some parts of the country have specific histories of demonstrated issues, with California and Texas coming specifically to mind. What has happened here, however, is that those vulnerabilities are now laid bare for all to see. To my second point, the fact that the substations were taken out by gunfire suggests that groups intent on causing chaos have now figured out how to do it. That brings me to my third point about the radicalized political environment. We have in this country, amongst other countries, a cohort of accelerationists who seek, for various reasons, to bring about a civil war. From a document that has been making the rounds on accelerationist discussion groups, creating chaos is perceived to bring an opportunity to start that war. At this point, at least one person died during the outage, and it is under investigation whether or not the death was the direct result of the power being out. Bear in mind that medical equipment, heat, clean water, all of these things depend on the availability of power. Even if you heat your home with some variety of fuel, such as gas or oil, power is required to operate your furnace. In this kind of environment, in the winter, homes will get cold without power, and people, especially the elderly and infirm, may die. The reason I bring this up is that according to North Carolina law, this can become a murder charge. Whoever this is tied to, they may very well end up facing such charges. To that end, shell casings have been found at the two sites. While this doesn't reveal anything off the bat, it does reveal the location from which the shots were fired, which could lead to additional evidence. My main concern here, though, is that there may be groups that will take that as a reasonable risk and act anyway. We cannot discount this as a possibility. In what appears like it may have been a copycat attempt, a hydropower generation plant in neighboring South Carolina was also the site of shots fired. This attack, however, was a failure. There were no injuries and no outages caused by it, and the individual will probably be caught pretty quickly, as there is video footage of his vehicle. I will keep you on top of this story as it develops, because I feel this one's going to go on for a bit. Okay, everyone, we have a message from a listener. DOA writes, listening to 110, something you didn't mention about the robot cop topic. By the way, I agree with what you did mention. What happens if the control network gets hacked? Because I'm sure said network is 110% secure and nobody would ever be able to gain control of an armed robot and, for the lack of a better phrase, cause an internal terrorist attack on a mass shooting. Side note, he did actually write an XML sarcasm tag around that sentence. Hopefully I have rendered it faithfully. I have to admit it here, I feel a little daft for not thinking of that myself. Anyway, DOA continues. But I think that this is as much, if not more, of a possible issue than it becoming a video game, as whomever is controlling said robot in your video game scenario would be a law enforcement officer, and so should be still held to the same standards. Okay, I gotta interrupt here, because a big part of the trust problem that law enforcement has right now is that standards are not upheld. While officers in some areas have been held accountable for their lapses in good judgment and good practice, others in other areas have not, and it doesn't seem to matter how much good law enforcement does. These handful are the ones who grab headlines and spark outrage, leading to the trust issue that exists between law enforcement and community. Anyway, continuing. If anything, there is one mindset that robots would allow for less issues, as there's no human danger from the law enforcement side, so maybe less of an officer involved shooting, etc. Well, I'm sure that's the idea. I think you're thinking that a robot cop operator, robo-coperator, whatever, the guy behind the terminal, is going to let the robot take hits from whatever it's been sent in to deal with, and truthfully, that is the job of robots in law enforcement. To do things that need done without putting officers in danger. But I just cannot get myself past the idea that it is dehumanizing law enforcement further than it already is and is the opposite of what we should be doing. Regardless, it's a moot point, at least for now, and at least in San Francisco. As I mentioned earlier, the city government has reversed the decision by the same ratio as the one they'd originally approved it, 8-3. Thanks for the message, DOA. The latest interesting toy on the iPhone is an application called Lenza. Lenza is a tool that will take a selfie of you, and then using Stable Diffusion AI, it will produce new images of you in a bunch of different styles, ranging from anime to Renaissance to Andy Warhol. It looks like a lot of fun. It's a paid app, which suggests that analytics may be at a minimum or absent. This is, of course, not a guarantee of any kind. The Stable Diffusion AI is capable of quite a lot in terms of imagining and reimagining people, places, and things. However, one certain thing is that its requirements for computational horsepower profoundly exceed what is available in a phone. As such, I would say that it is certain that the images being submitted for it to work with are being uploaded to the cloud. And as with all such cases, the images may be stored somewhere, used for other purposes, or might just leak. I think, though, for the most part, that I have no qualms with this interesting bit of fun. The main caveat would be that any pictures that you send it should be strictly confined to those that you are comfortable with revealing to the world. In a bit of unusual good news in the smartphone realm, Apple have recently added a feature to iOS called Advanced Data Protection. The feature adds a layer of end-to-end encryption to everything that you back up to iCloud. The responses to this development have been pretty much predictable. On one hand, privacy and rights groups, such as the Electronic Frontier Foundation, have applauded the measure. Victory proclaims the headline of an EFF press release on the topic, which describes the encrypted backups as a long-standing demand by the EFF and other privacy-oriented organizations. The release says, quote, "We applaud Apple for listening to experts, child advocates, and users who want to protect their most sensitive data. Encryption is one of the most important tools that we have for maintaining privacy and security online, and that's why we included the demand that Apple let users encrypt iCloud backups in the Fix It Already campaign that we launched in 2019, end quote. But you know who's not happy? The FBI, that's who. A statement from the agency says, quote, "This hinders our ability to protect the American people from criminal acts ranging from cyber attacks and violence against children to drug trafficking, organized crime, and terrorism. In this age of cybersecurity and demands for security by design, the FBI and law enforcement partners need lawful access by design," end quote. No, they don't. Get a warrant, and then we'll talk. If the FBI is scared of it, then it's pretty clear that it's effective. Between their denunciation and the endorsement from EFF, I would recommend that all Apple iPhone users turn this feature on and use it. As usual, we'll end this week's show with the fail of the week. Northeastern University is home to the Cybersecurity Privacy Institute, a group which studies surveillance. Keep that in mind, and this story will be beautifully ironic. Apparently, sometime back in October, the university, at the direction of Senior Vice Provost David Luisi, installed motion sensors underneath the desks of a building named the Interdisciplinary Science and Engineering Complex, or ISEC, the building that the Cybersecurity Privacy Institute calls home, which sensors would detect when a given desk was occupied. In other words, a university that has an institute that studies surveillance decided not just to engage in surveillance, but to do so in the very space in which the institute that studies surveillance is housed. Only a PhD could have the tunnel vision to come up with this. It goes without saying that grad students who are studying surveillance might have something of a dim view of being surveilled, but here I am saying it anyway because it's clearly not obvious enough. The students responded to the surveillance by removing all of the sensors and arranging them on a wall in a manner to spell out the word no as a clear message to the university. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and The Crowded Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Azriel, Misdemeanor, Ed, DOA, Fungaboo, and Julie Bernstein for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Sometimes you may also find 277 or 480. I'm going to do that paragraph again because I blew in the mic. As I mentioned earlier in this episode, the city government has revised the decision.